This is Fred T. with a BelowTopSecret.com podcast in response to Thomas Crown's podcast. I was at work today and was listening to your podcast, and unfortunately, I don't have a microphone at work, otherwise I would have probably tried to respond then. However, after listening to your post, Thomas, I found it particularly fascinating, and what I found really fascinating was kind of the introspection that was going on with some of the questions that you asked. Just looking at myself and, who was I? Who am I? And where am I going? What is my motivation? What do I want? And surprisingly, it's actually still like I have been home now for several hours. I worked a little extra today. And I'm on a 24-hour shift tomorrow, so I'm going to be heading to bed pretty soon here. I find myself sitting at home kind of pondering these seemingly simple questions that you asked. And it's become quite a complex thought process that's going on. I figure, like you, should give some background. I won't go into a total personal bio. As many of you know, I was an Eagle Scout. My Boy Scout Explorer Post experiences have a profound effect on what I do and influenced to a huge degree what my interests are, some of my abilities, things like that. I also worked a large variety of jobs, and not that I tended to just quit and leave, but just, it's the nature of being a teenager and a student, anywhere from a liquor store clerk, which made me very popular in high school because I had access to booze, to what I feel very important jobs to me, at least in my upbringing, the first of which was I worked as a bank clerk at the credit union of SRI International. And a lot of you conspiracy people probably know the name, maybe not. SRI International is a private think tank that's located in Menlo Park, California, just off basically in the shadows of the Stanford campus. They do a ton of classified government research. There were areas, this was quite some time ago. I'm talking more than almost 20 years ago now. It seems a lot longer than that when I look back at it. They had things like biometric scanning for certain areas. They had what appeared to be a huge underground complex that, again, was only accessible by either guarded elevators or elevators that had biometric scans to even open. Just a lot of research going on there that was classified. They do non-classified stuff. The mouse was actually invented there. Detergent, Tide's formulation was invented there. If you go to their website, there's actually quite a bit. That denial of areas in these... I never saw any saucers or anything like that, but just the odd people that worked there, clearly very brilliant in certain senses of the way and totally clueless in the other, with various psychoses. There was a strange little guy who, on his application, it was listed he was a senior research scientist. He would come in every day at the same time, and we gave him a $5 bill that was double wrapped in a napkin, and then my hand had to be in a plastic bag when I handed it to him. And he took the money out of the napkin and then proceeded on his way. And we did that almost every day the credit union was open. It really got me into the whole conspiracy, there was something going on that wasn't being explained kind of thing, and that kind of moved into, the whole conspiracy aspect, my interests in it, and things like that. my other job was teaching high school auto shop, and I was an assistant teacher for many years. I started 2 years after the credit union job, and that also, that kind of instilled the love for teaching that I still carry to this day. I lecture quite a bit at work, and I do things like that. Those are the two, at least in my upbringing, those are the two jobs that had the greatest impact on my life. You know, from there, you go to school. I worked a variety of jobs. Got a 4-year degree in nursing, a bachelor's of science, which doesn't really, for nursing, it's kind of a blue-collar profession with a white-collar cover on it almost. You know, it didn't start out wanting to be a nurse. I actually wanted to become a paramedic and then a fireman. And unfortunately, in this area, the competition for firefighting positions, unless you fit certain groups that they were after, you know, you might have 3,000 people applying for one job. Well, you just, you know, you're not going to get it. With those kind of odds, it's just not going to happen. So, you know, I kind of ended up settling, really, on nursing. And why nursing? Well, to be perfectly honest with you, it was going to be the second highest paying occupation out of college, outside of accounting, of all things. And, you know, there was a huge shortage of nurses at the time. Of course, when that changed, when Clinton came into office, coincidentally right around when I was graduating, and nobody wanted to hire nurses because they were afraid that the Clinton health care plan was going to completely downsize everything and people were going to be out of work. You know, forced my wife and I, it wasn't my wife at the time, we both met first semester in nursing school, it's a bit of a fluke. She decided to take a clinical that was way out of her area. I randomly selected that clinical because it was in the facility I wanted, and we just kind of hit it off. That was in 1991, so we've been together, married, or dating for longer than some of our ATS members have been alive. Just, you know, kind of scary. You know, we ended up at a children's hospital in the central part of California, as there was no work at all for us when we left. Now, as many of you probably know, the nursing shortage has changed. But, you know, at the time, we took what we could. I ended up in the pediatric intensive care unit. I never intended to do pediatric care, wasn't really all that interested in pediatric care. Believe it or not, I actually wanted to be a life flight nurse. So my whole goal was to follow the traditional path. You get a job in a med-surg unit, and then you go to the adult ICUs until you get noticed, and then you ascend to life flight status. Instead, I ended up in the pediatric intensive care unit, and I've pretty much stayed there for over the last 10 years. You know, in a variety of roles. As many of you know, I'm sure I've pointed this out probably too many times, because it is a position that I'm enjoy with every fiber of my being, and I am very proud of the position. Not only that I was selected out of many candidates when I applied, but that it's also a very demanding job, and we can provide near physician level services, and we're a nurse led team. You know, and eventually moved into that. So I would say that, you know, my occupation does in some ways define who and what I am. Many times it seems, however, my occupation is basically an extension of a lot of the stuff that I learned in the Scouts, and I kind of that gravitated, you know, me towards this whole endeavor, perhaps, that doing transport and things of that nature. You know, from a nursing standpoint, the best way I can describe it, those of you that have read The Right Stuff by Tom Wolfe, or at least seen the movie, because they do talk about it a little bit in the movie. Truly, I should really read the books instead of seeing the movies, but I'll get off my soapbox. Tom Wolfe, he talks about this pyramid of fighter pilots, and that the Edwards flight test pilots were at the top, or Muroc Air Force Base, as it was called at the time, were at the top of the pyramid. That is, they were the best of the breed, if you want to say. And obviously Chuck Yeager was at the very pinnacle of the pyramid for a good chunk of that time. Critical care transport nurses, be it the neonatal intensive care unit, the pediatric intensive care unit, which I am, and the OB team, God help them, man, you couldn't get me near one of their transports. We're all at the top of this pyramid from a nursing skills standpoint. We have a higher level of practice than the average nurse. We have a total autonomy to do what we need to do out in the field. And we're doing physician-level care under the control of a physician. I don't want you guys to think that I'm a total loose cannon here. And so the only people that potentially are above us is the life flight guys, because they don't even check in with the doctor like we do. They just do it. And they're also we go hospital to hospital. They're the guys that are landing at the accident site and working from scratch. So anyway, with being on the top of this pyramid comes that kind of almost, not quite fighter jock mentality. You don't want to be that gung-ho when you're dealing with sick kids, but it's just that self-confidence and that sense of presence and that just sense that you're going to be able to handle any situation that crops up. And a lot of that does carry over into what I do, how I look at things, you know, things like that. It's really drilled into me a sense of what can I do, where are my limitations, you know, where do I need to stop? And I think that's a pretty good definition. I feel a lot of the times that I try to keep work at home, but some aspects like this do follow me. For good or for bad, I would say. But I think just the occupation is, as I think you touched on, Thomas, it's a small part of kind of the overall person. I think that there's so many different facets that make up who and what we are. You know, life experience, what we've done, you know, how we're feeling about ourselves. There's so many variables and so many, it really, I'm not kidding, I did spend a huge amount of time just pondering the issues that you brought up. And quite frankly, it wouldn't have done your post justice to just post a few words. It really, you know, deserved some introspection. And, you know, the best way to do this is to kind of podcast. You know, clearly, as you can tell by all my ums and ahs and everything, I'm not really scripted here. The other part I found intriguing, you mentioned that, you know, do you feel you're a person that remains steady in the sea of change, or are you constantly being redefined? And I would argue that even somebody who thinks or steadfastly doesn't change, despite all the change around him, that in itself whether he's changed or his environment's changed, that's still a change, whether that person wants to perceive it or cares to perceive it or not. So I think we're being redefined on a daily basis as we adapt to whatever reality is presented to us. And I think that aspect of it, I think that is human nature. Now, are we recreating ourselves? Not necessarily. It just kind of depends on the person and how comfortable they are with where they're at. It's been kind of my experience that any attempt to suddenly change who and what you are is just doomed for failure. You know, maybe a slow process that works or something to that effect. But I think we're constantly in a period of evaluation and, you know, redefining our goals. Sometimes minute to minute we redefine our goals. Sorry, I had to take a sip of water here. Change is an inevitable process with anything, and there is a great deal of fear with change. There's a great, traumas associated with change often. People debate change. Am I doing the right thing? There's a whole host of issues that come with change. Change can be good. Change can also be bad. Change can also signify the end of a cherished era or a close of a bad one. One of the few things, and I do mean few because nursing school really was a joke, one of the things that stuck with me, though, is we, as nurses, and I think people in general, G described us as change agents. You know, facilitators of change. And she wasn't talking. You get one of the problems with nursing schools, especially a four-year program, they try to make it a lot fancier than it really is. So you have all these theories and stuff you work behind. But, you know, the change agent really, really stuck with me. And it really does, when you think about it, what have you changed during the course of the day? And at some point, it's almost uncalculable how many changes you've made on a conscious level or an unconscious level to affect change in your environment. So I think even as I pointed out, we're just constantly being redefined. And sometimes we redefine, sometimes our environment redefines itself around our needs and things like that. Now, this podcast is by no means complete. As I mentioned above, I'm actually still pondering, who am I? And why am I here and what am I doing? What drives me, what motivates me? I can tell you that the number one motivation for me is family. My wife and my 3-year-old are my primary drive. I think that's just a natural. I don't know if it's an instinct or what, but that's really what drives me right now. I can safely say I've had a lot of motivations for different stuff in the past, but it's going to take a while to sort these out. I want to, as I kind of delve further into my own psyche, it's always interesting what you might find. I want to thank Thomas Crown for posting this really interesting topic, and it's quite thought provoking. And I look forward to this back and forth continuing, and maybe everyone can learn something together as part of this. Anyway, this is Fred T., who's pretty tired and rambling now, signing off.